It's time for justice. Welcome to the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show, heard every Wednesday from 12:30 to 1 p.m. on 97.3 FM WRIR and at www.wrir.org. I'm your host, Marty Wakebright. This show is written and produced by Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. We give free, civil, non-criminal legal aid to low-income people in Richmond, Petersburg, Charlottesville, and surrounding cities and counties. Coming up on this week's show...
To require people to have insurance, it has to be affordable. And so that's why the marketplaces and the tax subsidies paid through the marketplace are a very, very important part of this whole system that... in the Affordable Care Act, was attempting to make health insurance, quality, affordable health insurance, available to everybody. And without the tax subsidies, most people who have gained insurance over the last couple years probably could no longer afford it. So that's why the case decision coming out of the Supreme Court was so very important.
Health law attorney Jill Henkin at the Virginia Poverty Law Center explains the impact of the U.S. Supreme Court decision, which upheld the legality of health insurance subsidies in all 50 states, and what is needed to close the health care gap in Virginia. And during this week's News You Can Use, we describe new Social Security rules which require that all evidence be submitted as part of a disability determination. All that and more coming up. Stay with us. The show is supported in part by a grant from the Virginia Law Foundation. This show, number 270, is the sole responsibility of Central Virginia Legal Aid Society and gives only general legal information. If you have a legal problem and need specific legal advice about your situation, contact an attorney. If you can't afford an attorney, we'll tell you later in the show how to get free legal advice or representation in a civil case. The Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show is heard every Wednesday at 12:30 on WRIR 97.3 FM Richmond Independent Radio and online at www.wrir.org and is made possible by community radio volunteers at WRIR. And now, this week's News You Can Use. Earlier this year, the Social Security Administration, or SSA, issued a new rule saying that someone applying for disability benefits is now required to inform or submit all evidence to SSA, regardless of whether it helps establish disability. This is a big change from prior SSA rules that only required the submission of evidence the claimant felt would be helpful to the case and would show that the claimant is disabled. Under the new rule, the claimant must inform SSA or submit to SSA all evidence that they are aware of that relates to whether they are disabled. This means that where in the past a person applying for benefits only had to give evidence that helped prove they were disabled, they will now also be required to provide information or submit evidence that shows that they are not disabled. The only exceptions are attorney work product and duplicate information. Attorney work product means any communication between a claimant and their representative, but does not include medical evidence. So, even if an attorney only obtains a written opinion or report to determine whether to offer representation, this will now become evidence required to be provided to SSA. If you are trying to obtain Social Security or SSI disability benefits, these changes definitely impact you and your disability claim. You now must tell SSA about any medical professional you have seen for any condition that could limit your ability to work in any way. Even if you were having a medical exam to obtain life insurance or saw a doctor one time and you immediately decided never to return, you have to tell SSA about this evidence. You are expected to trust that SSA will understand all of your medical decisions and that they are reviewing your evidence objectively. This means that if any doctor gives you a written indication that you can work, you must provide that information to SSA. If you obtain an opinion that you disagree with, your only recourse is to ask another of your physicians to address the opinion in writing or for you to provide a written explanation or testimony explaining why that report should not be considered a realistic expression of your abilities. Most importantly, it requires that you understand how your physician feels about your disability claim. If you were asking a medical professional to give an opinion of your ability to work, make sure that you have an honest discussion with them first to make sure that they understand the limitations you are experiencing and that they agree with your conclusion that you cannot work. With this week's News You Can Use, this is your host, Marty Wegbright. Welcome back to the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show on WRIR 97.3 FM, Richmond Independent Radio. We're here at the offices of the Virginia Poverty Law Center. We're speaking with health law attorney Jill Hankin, and we will be talking about last month's decision by the U.S. Supreme Court that sustained an important part of the Affordable Care Act, and in particular the subsidies that make health care affordable. Welcome to the show, Jill.
Hi, Marty.
So before talking about the actual Supreme Court case, I thought we would talk a little bit about the background of the Affordable Care Act and the other parts of the Affordable Care Act that have been in place for a goodly while now that are really important reforms that mean that the subsidies are so important for everybody to have so that they can take advantage of those reforms. Mm-hmm. What are some of those reforms that sort of fade into the background?
You know, the law was passed in 2010, and almost from the very beginning, there were very important reforms made to the insurance industry in the United States. Many of these changes have just made significant changes in people's lives. So, for example, one of the reforms that people know about and really appreciate is the idea that your adult children can stay on your health plan until they turn age 26. That's helped myself and many other people throughout the country, millions of people throughout the country. One of the most significant private insurance reforms, though, is the right to have coverage for pre-existing conditions. It used to be that people who already had diabetes or a heart condition could not even get insurance because the cost of it was prohibitive. And then if they did manage to scrape together the money to buy health insurance somehow, they couldn't get any services for their pre-existing conditions for 6 months or 12 months. And it's like, what's the point of having insurance if it's not available to cover those pre-existing conditions? Well, the Affordable Care Act changed that. Number one, requiring that products be sold and priced without any regard to someone's health condition. And secondly, requiring the private health companies, insurance companies, to cover services for those pre-existing conditions. That's just huge. And while we're speaking about the cost of health insurance, the Affordable Care Act also requires all health plans to meet what's called a medical loss ratio that actually requires plans to cover at least 80 to 85% of that premium cost needs to go to the cost of medical care, not to administrative costs or to a CEO salaries. 80 to 85% of the premiums collected has to be for medical care. And I think that's made a big difference as well. So there are other reforms like prohibiting lifetime limits on your health insurance and annual limits on your health insurance. So all these things combined have really changed the landscape of our private health insurance system. And those reforms that are in place now, people depend upon them and certainly want to see those stay in place.
And how are those reforms dependent upon the fact that we now have close to a universal healthcare system where most people have to have health insurance, and most people get subsidies to help them buy that health insurance if they can't afford it.
The Affordable Care Act also requires most people to have health insurance. There are many exceptions, so people should realize there are exceptions that you could claim during the year through the marketplace or at the end of the year on your tax returns. If for any number of reasons you didn't have health insurance, either because of the cost or because of some of your personal circumstances, you're not required to have health insurance, but most of us are. And that meant that to require people to have insurance, it has to be affordable. And so that's why the marketplaces and the tax subsidies paid through the marketplace are a very, very important part of this whole system that in the Affordable Care Act was attempting to make health insurance, quality, affordable health insurance available to everybody. And without the tax subsidies, most people who have gained insurance over the last couple of years probably could no longer afford it. So that's why the case decision coming out of the Supreme Court was so very important.
And so before we talk about the actual case, what has been the impact of the Affordable Care Act subsidies right here in Virginia? How has it helped?
This past open enrollment period, 385,000 Virginians did secure health insurance through the federal marketplace. And most of those individuals, 286,000 of those individuals, receive tax subsidies to help them pay for their premiums. And those subsidies can range from, you know, $20 to several hundred dollars, depending on the person's income. So obviously, the lower income people get the more generous tax subsidies to help them pay for their coverage. So we know there are many people who are paying $100 a month or even less for quality health insurance.
And so you mentioned the federal health insurance marketplace, and I guess that is what led to the legal challenge before the Supreme Court of the United States. Tell us about that.
The challengers argued that tax subsidies were not available in the federal marketplace. The way the Affordable Care Act was set up, states had choices of either setting up their own marketplace or exchange in their own state for their own citizens, or participating in the federal marketplace, which has ended up providing the exchange for 34 states. And in both the state exchanges and the federal marketplace, the tax credits have been paid to people over the last 2 years. The opponents dug through the 2,000-page Affordable Care Act and found a phrase that in their minds limited the tax credits only to people who were purchasing insurance through the state marketplaces. And that was the crux of the opponent's argument, whether or not tax credits could legally be paid in the federal marketplace.
So the option essentially was used by the opponents of the law to try to kill it. Apparently that did not succeed.
No, it did not succeed. The Supreme Court, in its decision, which was a 6-3 decision, found that, in fact, the law does allow tax subsidies to be received in a federal marketplace. The justices, Chief Justice Roberts, wrote the majority opinion. He determined, looking within the scope of the statute itself, that the federal marketplaces were contemplated as an avenue for people to get tax credits. And when you look at the law as a whole, the whole plan and the whole system was designed to support insurance, the insurance industry, to support affordable health insurance to citizens, and that it wouldn't matter whether they got their health insurance from a state exchange or a federal exchange. And there was enough evidence, enough other statutory provisions within the law itself to make that ruling. And it was quite compelling that the justices did find support for their position within the statute itself by looking through many, many provisions of the Affordable Care Act, and also considering what the goal and purpose of the law was in the first place. They found basically that the opponent's position, if upheld, would totally undermine the law and would initiate what we call a death spiral for insurance companies, because the cost of insurance would just skyrocket out of reach of most people.
So where do we go from here? What is the future of the Affordable Care Act, of the subsidies, and how are things going forward?
The court decision doesn't change anything. The court upheld the law, so really status quo just continues. And in a state like Virginia, citizens can continue to use the federal marketplace to get their health insurance. So I would say primarily we've got status quo. The Affordable Care Act is once again survived challenge in the courts and in the Supreme Court, and we should move forward. And in a state like Virginia, moving forward means that we should very seriously consider, evaluate, and move forward on expanding available health insurance coverage so that up to 400,000 Virginians who are currently in a gap can get coverage through the state and the federal government.
And tell us about that Medicaid gap. Who falls into it? Why do they fall into it?
Well, as the Affordable Care Act was originally designed, there was a place for everybody to get health insurance regardless of their family income. All states had an existing Medicaid program, and then the marketplaces would provide coverage to people who have income above the poverty line. And then in the middle of those two places, between existing Medicaid and the poverty line, there was an expansion of the Medicaid program to cover everybody in between. Well, the first Supreme Court challenge to the Affordable Care Act, in that decision, the Supreme Court ruled that the Medicaid expansion piece, that middle piece of the Affordable Care Act, was an option for states. So that led to years of more controversy and more debates in every single state. At this point, 30 states have taken up the option to expand their Medicaid programs to cover more individuals, but the rest have not, and that the rest includes Virginia. But states surrounding us, like West Virginia and Kentucky, Ohio, Maryland, Delaware, District of Columbia, Pennsylvania, all those states have grown their Medicaid program to capture and provide for health insurance for that population in the middle. And it's primarily very low-income adults who are working in all sorts of industries and all sorts of jobs, but they really don't have enough money to afford health insurance on their own, and they don't qualify to go to the marketplace for coverage. So in Virginia, we know that up to 400,000 individuals could get quality, affordable health insurance if Virginia moved forward with this closing the coverage gap. The issue has been on the table in the legislature for the last 3 years. Unfortunately, in those 3 years, the legislature has failed to adopt a position to close the coverage gap. So we think this is the next step to really make the Affordable Care Act work for all Virginians. Virginia should step forward now and close the coverage gap. The federal government, through 2016, actually will pay 100% of the costs of that new coverage. And after 2016, the federal participation slowly drops to just 90%. But still, after 2020, the federal government paying 90% of the costs of this new coverage is huge. It would bring billions of dollars into Virginia to not only cover the insurance for this population, but it would support our hospitals, it would create new jobs, and create new revenues from those jobs, and really support our economy.
And does that 90% after 2020 essentially continue into the indefinite future?
Yes. The law, the Affordable Care Act, does provide for ongoing federal participation at 90%. And I would also point out, if Virginia took this option, that we would be saving some state dollars that we currently spend on providing health services of one kind or another to people through indigent care programs, through our mental health system, through our correction system. There are many places that we're spending only state dollars on those services, and if we were smart and used the Affordable Care Act to expand coverage to this population, we would be bringing our tax dollars back home to Virginia through the federal government, and we could save those state dollars that we're spending on some of those other programs.
And speaking about bringing state dollars back to Virginia, even though we are not currently in an open enrollment period, I understand that there are still opportunities for people to enroll in the Affordable Care Act and to purchase health insurance through the marketplace throughout the entire year. Would you tell us about that?
Sure. Well, first of all, everyone who currently has their tax credits can rest assured that those credits are legally available to them, and they should continue to use their health insurance. But as you say, outside of open enrollment, there are other opportunities for people to enroll in health coverage. People can do that when they experience changes in their family circumstances that trigger a special enrollment period for them. Things like if you get married, if you have a baby, if you move to a different place, if you lose your employer-based coverage, if you get out of jail, if you change your immigration status, all these changes in life events can trigger a special enrollment period. So even today, you can go to the federal marketplace and apply for health insurance with tax subsidies. There's also a special enrollment period for people who fell into that Medicaid gap that we were just talking about, who then get a new source of income. There's a change in their income that then makes them eligible for marketplace coverage. They too can get a special enrollment period and get insurance for the rest of 2015. So if people have questions about that, they should call either the marketplace or call navigators or other assisters to find out whether or not they qualify for a special enrollment period.
And these special enrollment periods, are they time limited? In other words, is it for 30 days or 60 days or 90 days? What are the rules about that?
If you have one of these life-changing events, you must apply for your special enrollment period within 60 days of that event. So if you get married after your honeymoon, make sure within 60 days you go to the federal marketplace to apply for your insurance, or 60 days from the birth of your child, or 60 days from that change in income that then makes you eligible for marketplace coverage.
And could you give us the contact information for the healthcare navigator so that people don't miss out on that 60-day special enrollment period?
Right. Well, first I'll give you the number for the federal marketplace call center, open 24 hours a day, is 1-800-318-2596. Again, it's 1-800-318-2596. You can call navigators throughout Virginia at 1-888-392-5132. Again, 1-888-392-5132. Or check out a new website that the Commonwealth of Virginia is sponsoring called Cover Virginia. So it's www.coverva.org. This can also lead you to assisters to help you with any questions you have or with applications you want to file.
Well, thank you very much. We have been speaking with health law attorney Jill Hankin at the Virginia Poverty Law Center about the survival of the Affordable Care Act from its challenge in the U.S. Supreme Court last month, where we go from here, and the availability of special enrollment periods so people can continue to take advantage of the tax subsidies that are available to them under the Act. Thanks so much for being on the show.
Thank you, Marty.
Keep on walking.
That's all for this week's Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show. This show is heard every Wednesday from 12:30 to 1 p.m. The show is the sole responsibility of Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. To see if you can get free civil legal aid, call during intake hours. These are Monday through Thursday, 9 a.m. to 11:30 a.m. and 1 p.m. to 2:30 p.m. The phone number is 200-6046 for intake, 648-1012 for the main number, and 1-800-868-1012 to call toll-free. If you have any comments on the show, you can email them to marty@cvlas.org. In addition, every first-run Central Virginia Legal Aid radio show ever broadcast is available at www.radioforall.net. That's radio, the numeral 4, all.net. Then click the contributor link, then click Marty Wegbright, Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. This show provides only general legal information. If you have a legal problem and need specific legal advice about your situation, contact an attorney. If you can't afford one, call Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. Last month, the U.S. Supreme Court upheld marriage equality in all 50 states. Join us next Wednesday at 12:30 p.m. when James Parrish, Executive Director of Equality Virginia, explains the impact of that decision and the continuing effort to limit its impact. That's law for the rest of us next week on the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show. I'm Marty Wegbright.